As you probably know, the middle Baudelaire was not referring to anybody named Roger. He was saying a man's name to indicate that he understood what Violet had said and would act accordingly, and over the course of the next 2 hours, that's exactly what he did. While Sunny used her noisy shoes to keep the crab in the corner and Violet used the potato as a toe and the crab's claws as clean cutters, Klaus used the Quagmire notebooks to study for the comprehensive exams, and everything worked the way it should. Sunny tapped her shoes so noisily that the crab remained trapped. Violet was so quick with the potato and metal rods that they soon were snipped into stable-sized pieces. And Klaus, although he had to squint because Duncan was using his glasses, read Isidore's measuring notes so carefully that before long he had memorized the length, width, and depth of just about everything. "Violet, ask me the measurements of the navy blue scarf," Klaus said, turning the notebook over so he couldn't peek. Violet yanked the potato away just in time, and the crab snipped off another bit of the metal rods. "What are the measurements of the navy blue scarf?" she asked. 2 decimeters long," Klaus recited, 9 centimeters wide, and 4 millimeters thick. "It's boring, but it's correct. Sonny, ask me the measurements of the bar of deodorant soap." The crab saw an opportunity to leave the corner, but Sonny was too quick for it. "Soap?" Sonny quizzed Klaus, tapping her tiny noisy shoes until the crab retreated. 8 centimeters by 8 centimeters by 8 centimeters, Klaus said promptly. "That one's easy. You're doing great, you two. I bet that crab's going to be almost as tired as we are." "No," Violet said. "He's done. Let him go, Sonny. We have all the staple-sized pieces we need. I'm glad that part of the staple-making process is over. It's very nerve-wracking to tease a crab." "What's next?" Klaus said, as the crab scurried away from the most frightening moments of his life. "Next, you teach me Mr. Amora's stories," Violet said, "while Sonny and I bend these little bits of metal into the proper shape." "Shablow," Sonny said, which meant something like, "How are we going to do that?" "Watch," Violet said, and Sonny watched. While Klaus closed Isidore's black notebook and began paging through Duncan's dark green one, Violet took the glob of creamed spinach and mixed it with a few pieces of stray hay and dust until it was a sticky, gluey mess. Then she placed this mess on the spiky end of the fork and stuck it to one of the bales of hay so the handle end of the fork hung over the side. She blew on the creamed spinach stray hay and dust mixture until it hardened. "I always thought that Prufrock Prep's cream spinach was awfully sticky," Violet explained, "and then I realized it could be used as glue. And now we have a perfect method for making those tiny strips into staples. See, if I lay a strip across the handle of the fork, a tiny part of the strip hangs off each of the sides. Those are the parts that will go inside the paper when it's a staple. If I take off my noisy shoes," and here Violet paused to take off her noisy shoes, "and use the metal ends to tap on the strips, they'll bend around the handle of the fork and turn into staples. See?" "Jeeba!" Sunny shrieked. She meant, "You're a genius, but what can I do to help?" "You can keep your noisy shoes on your feet," Violet replied, "and keep the crabs away from us. And Klaus, you start summarizing stories."
"Roger,"
Sunny said.
"Roger,"
Klaus said, and once again, neither of them were referring to Roger. They meant, once again, that they understood what Violet had said and would act accordingly, and all three Baudelaires acted accordingly for the rest of the night. Violet tapped away at the metal strips, and Klaus read out loud from Duncan's notebook, and Sunny stomped her noisy shoes. Soon, the Baudelaires had a pile of homemade staples on the floor, the details of Mr. Remora's stories in their brains, and not a single crab bothering them in the shack. And even with the threat of Coach Genghis hovering over them, the evening actually began to feel rather cozy. It reminded the Baudelaires of evenings they had spent when their parents were still alive, in one of the living rooms in the Baudelaire mansion. Violet would often be tinkering away at some invention, while Klaus would often be reading and sharing the information he was learning, and Sunny would often be making loud noises. Of course, Violet was never tinkering frantically at an invention that would save their lives. Klaus was never reading something so boring, and Sunny was never making loud noises to scare crabs. But nevertheless, as the night wore on, the Baudelaires felt almost at home in the orphan's shack. And when the sky began to lighten with the first rays of dawn, the Baudelaires began to feel a certain thrill that was quite different from the thrill of being in disguise. It was a thrill that I have never felt in my life, and it was a thrill that the Baudelaires did not feel very often. But as the morning sun began to shine, the Baudelaire orphans felt the thrill of thinking your plan might work after all, and that perhaps they would eventually be as safe and happy as the evenings they remembered.